This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know that feeling when you have something that's really been bothering you, or when you've been fixating on something in your life that's looming large in your mind? We all carry around different stressors in our lives, big and small, and I think we inherently know that when we keep them bottled up inside, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, and to figure out how to work through whatever it is that's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for people who have experienced major trauma. There are plenty of benefits it can have for everyone. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. And don't underestimate the power of boundaries either. Those are super important. If you've been wondering if you should give therapy a try, check out BetterHelp. It's a fully online experience and designed from the ground up to be convenient and customizable to your schedule. To get started, you just have to fill out a brief questionnaire that will match you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no extra charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for March 15th, 2018. This is Slash Film Editor-in-Chief Peter Serretta, and on today's show, we're going to bring you something special, something different, and because news has slowed down, last June, in June of 2017, I visited the set of Avengers Infinity War, and I spoke to directors Joe and Anthony Russo. You know the Russo brothers as the filmmakers behind the last two Captain America movies, Winter Soldier and Civil War. They are some great guys, and they're good on the in the interviews. Interviews on the set of a movie, they are usually keeping things pretty close to the vest. So even though this interview is 35 minutes, I can tell you that, you know, it doesn't really get into spoilers. You know, they are being very teasery with the information that they are doling out. But it is conducted between me and, I don't know, probably 5-10 other outlets that were on set. So you'll hear my voice in here. You'll hear some voices of some other film journalists from the internet. The audio is not perfect. You know, I never intended this to be broadcast. It was recorded with my iPhone in June of 2017, and that was before we even started this Slash Film Daily podcast. But I think it is listenable. Some of the questions might be a little low, but I think you'll get the gist of it from the answers from Anthony and Joe, and they tell us a lot about the movie. They talk about how the world has changed since Civil War, how they sorted out the timelines, cinematic inspirations, filming on IMAX cameras, balancing the tone between, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy and Iron Man, the troubles of shooting with the biggest ensemble cast of all time, crafting character-based action, James Gunn's role in this production, their Fantastic Four dreams, what to expect from Captain Marvel, how Infinity War will connect to Avengers 4, the possibility of a death in this film, comic book inspirations, the evolution of Guardians of the Galaxy, how other Marvel films connect to Infinity War, and the importance of the Infinity Stones. This whole interview can be read in text form on SlashFilm.com. But it's a special to you, the Slash Film Daily listeners. Here's the audio from the interview right now.
Hello. Hi, I'm Anthony Russo.
This is Joe Russo.
So, aside from the culmination of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, what is this movie about?
We can't really tell you.
Endurance.
You know, look, it's a I'm sorry, Pisani. Yes, remind me, are these being held?
Yeah.
Yeah, they are big.
I think they set up what today is.
Okay.
Until next year.
Yeah, I just got to remember what I can say.
I mean, for us, I mean, look, since we entered the MCU as storytellers, it's sort of, you know, we sort of picked up the story with Winter Soldier. It's just we've been carrying a thread forward from that point, a narrative thread. And for us, this movie is very much about how do we move forward from Civil War in a big way, and how do we sort of, what happens to that division between the Avengers, and how does that affect them? How do they deal, what does that mean when the greatest threat they'll ever face comes to them, you know, in that kind of a condition, in that kind of divided condition?
It's a personal journey, frankly, I think, for us as filmmakers, from Winter Soldier. There were seeds set in that movie that I think that we then tried to expound upon in Civil War that then led to Infinity War. And, you know, it's how we feel about the characters as comic book fans, the story that we want to see, you know, reimagining these characters through a very personal point of view. So it's not only a culmination of the last 10 years of Marvel storytelling, but for us, it's a culmination of our journey as directors through the Marvel Universe. And I think having at our disposal all of those characters and allowing ourselves to refilter them through the way that, again, that we see the universe, the way that we feel about the characters and the themes that we really want to bring to the forefront, that's what these two movies are. For us.
What would you say about like the state of the world? Like, are the Sokovia Accords still a thing? What's Cap been up to? He's been growing that beard.
It's a direct corollary to the end of Civil War. You know, you're coming into this film with the ramifications of that film at the forefront of this movie.
How long later in timeline is this one?
I think we always do everything based on when the last movie came out.
So. Sure. Going to be roughly 2 years.
It's hard to remember where we're at.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
So Winter Soldier was like more of an espionage thriller. Civil War was like a psychological thriller. What will we expect to see in terms of genre and tone in Infinity War?
There's a lot of characters in these movies that have tones that they're bringing from their own franchises. I think it's a very unique film. I don't think there are a lot of movies that have the kind of tone that this movie has because it's a combination of franchises. I don't think we've ever seen that before on this scale. And so I think it's got a really unique tone to it. And I think it's propulsive. I would say it's an adventure film, but it has elements of a you know, we were inspired by 90s crime films when we were working on the script. So it's got a it's got an energy to it, a bit of a smash and grab energy, and
almost like a heist genre.
Yeah.
What would be some of those titles specifically in the '90s?
The movies that we looked at: 2 Days in the Valley, Out of Sight. We were looking for, you know, we always look to movies for an inspiration for the energy that we're looking for, or a narrative construct that we want to be inspired by. Those two films in particular.
For us, it helped when you are dealing with all these different types of characters and all these different tones that have been established in the various films and storylines. It's like it's sort of becomes our organizing principle of for tone, you know, in terms of what the world is that we're creating, what rules are we playing by, and how does that filter? And every character, no matter where they're coming from, has to intersect with the sort of reality of that tone and that genre.
Yeah. I think sometimes people have misinterpreted in the past when we talk about movies, how we're using them. Really as inspiration for a narrative engine. You know, these movies are so complex, you need a unifying piece or a sense of cohesion. And that cohesion can come from a narrative construct that you can apply all the characters to. It's hard to find movies with this many characters. You can look at all them films, which have a tendency to be more verite, where we found, you know, 2 Days in the Valley, which would have had a narrative thrust to it, and had an energy that we were looking for. And again, just purely as something that inspires us in the room when we're working on the script.
Yeah, I would say and that comes from, you know, those many, many months that we spend with writers Marcus and McFeely in a room, sort of exploring the possibilities of where we can go with the storytelling, where we can take the characters, and then sort of finding ideas that most excite us and then starting to shape things around that.
Can you guys talk about filming the whole movie with the IMAX cameras? That
yeah.
process?
Yeah.
It's been amazing. They're beautiful cameras. The chip is unbelievable. It's stunning. You know, to be able to work with, we have a lot of characters who are tall. unnaturally
that helps.
Unnaturally tall. So it really helps with the frame because that IMAX aspect ratio works for those types of characters. And the landscapes are stunning. I mean, there's some really exotic landscapes in the film. And to be able to put those on IMAX screen, and it's an incredible tool to have as a filmmaker to be able to exploit that scale of aspect ratio.
What's it like doing the choir scenes with these gigantic characters?
Well, the good news is we've been working with IMAX very closely on this. You know, the technology of the cameras continues to evolve. So there's a new iteration of the cameras that is like much more user-friendly than they have been. Because we like, you know, in our style, we like a very active, aggressive camera. And so it's always been important to us to like try to convert their system to something that is a little more mobile and something that camera people can actually move in a way that's not going to just drag them to the ground. So yeah, we have a brand new camera that we're using on this called the Arri 65, which is finally completely synced up with the IMAX needs as well, and it gives us a lot more latitude in terms of what we could do with the cameras.
It's an IMAX branded Arri 65.
Yeah.
So. Going back to the tone stuff we were talking about, there's a lot of, each of these movies kind of have their own tone in the MCU, but the one that really stands out as the most distinct is the Guardians, and you guys are bringing them in. What is the approach with kind of getting them to mix together, and are they going to bring their own music?
Everybody does. Yeah. You know, Strange brings his own energy. Red, you know, Ant-Man brings his own energy.
Thor has a whole different.
Taika has a new approach to Thor, as you've seen in the trailer, and so all of that energy is combined. And specific to the Guardians, I mean, we have to find a way to bring those tones in, honor them, but also make them work with what we're doing with the movie. So again, I think the way that we find the best way to do that is to filter these things through our very personal expression of them as characters. And, you know, it's not dissimilar to what we did with Cap and Winter Soldier. There's a movement with the characters that towards a more, you know, Russo brothers execution.
What kind of role would you say they have in this film?
They have a great role in this film. I mean, let's say, you know, everyone is interwoven into this plot in a way where they have an emotional connection to the story and are emotionally affected by the stakes of the movie. You can't tell a movie with this many characters and not have each of those characters show up and honor them from their different franchises if they are not motivated to be there, if they are not in life or death circumstances, if they're not fighting to save their belief system or their way of life.
You talk about the challenges of the big set, like the choreography of all of these superheroes, especially in a movie like this. Like, how many are they all in a scene together? I mean, and how does that sort of work just practically for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, you're seeing a scene today. I don't know. Were you out there before you saw them? I mean, look, it's a high character count. In this scene, it's not a very complex scene on an action level, but even a scene where you're just talking becomes massively complex when you have a lot of characters. I mean, it takes a
lot of
time
movie
to shoot. Yeah, because you have to shoot every one of them. Like, they're all special. They're all special characters. They're all important to the storytelling.
Or somebody's favorite character.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yes, the movie as a whole, I mean, basically, this movie is only achievable with this amazing team that we've been working with now over several movies. We've gotten an amazing shorthand with one another. We've just tuned into one another very specifically on a creative level. So we have a really strong team. We spend many, many months preparing. That's really the trick. It's like you have to, one thing I love about our process here at Marvel is like we have the opportunity with the technology here and the budgets that we work with, you know, we get to make the movie several times before we make the movie, which is, you know, through previs, through extensive storyboarding, through editing it all together. There's a lot of experimentation, and that is very helpful, especially when you're dealing with such a complex number of characters and action, etc. So I would say basically like the way we work our way through is a lot of prep work.
And we've had the good fortune to have worked with a lot of the same collaborators on the last three films, our VFX supervisor, Dan DeLue, our editor, Jeff Ford, our DP, Trent Oplock, our stunt coordinator, Sam Hargrave. There is a core group of individuals that we've done a Vulcan mind meld with over the last three movies that we are all, you know, they know how we like to work. They understand the style that we like to employ. They think about the characters the same way that we think about the characters. We are all in unison in terms of the storytelling. And so having that support system has made it a lot easier with each successive movie. Certainly that airport sequence in Civil War was exceedingly difficult, but all of those people were there with us going through it. And in this movie, I think we have multiple sequences that are even more difficult. And thank God that we have this great unit of really talented people working with us.
Because it does really feel like we are working at even another level now in these movies, which is very exciting. So it's great.
Can you talk a little bit about the action? Because when we're, you know, with Winter Soldier, you were great inspired, and like seeing the evolution of you guys as action directors, Civil War was, you know, another notch up. What is the action in this film going to be? Because that was like more character based.
Sure.
Like, whatever.
I mean, yeah. Everything's always got to be character based. I think you really can't. We know we can't. If we're sitting in the edit room, watch a sequence for more than 20 seconds without a character having a point of view or moving the action forward. My brain just shuts down, or I start thinking about my laundry. The action for us, it's always character-based, but, you know, our team... Sorry,
and what I was going to say, in Winter Soldier, like, in terms of character-based, like, Winter Soldier was so specifically for us, everything in that movie was designed around that version of Captain America that we wanted to see, that we wanted to explore. And it's like, and everything in that film, all the stylistic choices just flowed from that, you know? And then Civil War was a bit of an evolution, because even though it was a Captain America movie, we were bringing so many other characters into it, characters that had powers that were different from the range of characters that we were using in Winter Soldier. And now it's even more so. So it's like, as the characters change, as their particular powers change,
the
nature of
changes.
Who they are, the chemistry, the style of our action evolves with that, you know, because it has to be specific to character.
It's dictated by who's in the sequence. What is the sequence about? What do the characters want in the sequence? Are we trying to create a sense of urgency? Are we trying to slow it down? Is it about tension? Is it about aggression? So I think you'll see several different styles employed in the movie, because the chemistry is different in each sequence and the needs of each sequence are different.
Despite being a follow-up of the Captain America story you guys have been working on, you're also now the third and fourth Avengers movie. So how much do you have to look at Joss Whedon's work, and do you have to escalate that, or how do you sort of look at this as a part of an Avengers sort of trilogy?
I mean, we look at the way that you would look at writers in comic books. You know, people pick up different runs and they go with it, you know? And if there are things from the mythology that you are inspired by or you find thematic relevancy in, you go with that. If there are things that the mythology that you want to see differently, then you explore ways to execute it differently. So I think, you know, of course there's a, you know, it's, you know, there is a list of movies that have preceded this, but those movies have been directed by a lot of different directors with a lot of different styles and a lot of different things to say. And, you know, Anth and I have found repeatedly that the best and only way for us to move forward is to receive that information and keep what we like and explore what we like and exploit what we like and tell the story that we want to tell. And I think the audience goes with you when you make those changes, or there are things that you discard, or the same way that you do in a comic run when you're reading it. You go, I want to see someone else's point of view on this. That was an awesome point of view, and I had a lot of fun with that. Now I want to see something else, and now I want to see. And that's, I think, what Marvel's done really well by, you know, bringing in a lot of different voices to execute their films.
I understand James Gunn is working on this film, so can you tell us a little bit outside of obviously him working on the Guardian stuff? What other aspects of the story is he collaborating with you guys on, and what's your experience been like with
this? It's been very similar, I think. To again, like it's a bit very much of a piece of how we've interacted with all the voices in the MCU, you know, whether it be Taika or James or
Peyton or Peyton, Scott. Yeah. I would say collectively, everyone in the Marvel Universe has been involved in this movie. We're very close with all the directors. We love them all. We have a lot of conversations with people constantly. We had a lot of talking with Taika because that movie isn't finished, and he had executed things on set that we needed real information about tonally, about the direction it was going in. The Guardians 2 movies existed. We had seen both, so we have an understanding of how those characters behave. So I think James is functioning the way that everyone has been functioning. I think it's a nod to James, the EP credit, that you know he really helped create those characters. But you know, as far as you know, how we're working, we're working in a real collaborative sort of united artists approach to the movie. In respect to hearing people's, where people are taking their characters. Ant-Man 2 is just about to start shooting, so we need to keep in communication with Peyton constantly about, you know, story elements and that may affect this. Coogler, I'm sorry, we didn't mention. Ryan was in the middle of shooting Black Panther, and he was here, and we had several conversations, met with him many times, met with the crew many times, with him, his production design department. We looked at Fight Viz from the story. We had a lot of interaction with Nate Moore, the producer. Many text messages back and forth with Ryan. So it's really just trying to do the job of managing the universe as it's progressing.
And I think here's really where it becomes relevant, most relevant, is that if a movie has been completed, there's really nothing else to talk about, right? The movie exists. It's like everything you need to know about that movie is in the movie, is on the screen. You know, that's the expression, that's the story. That's the experience that we all had of it. And then sort of that's what you need to know to carry that story forward and those characters forward. For the movies that haven't been completed, that's where it gets into a tricky spot for us, because we want to make sure that we're being sensitive to what's happening during the execution of those films, what's, you know, sort of the process of discovery that they will go through in the execution that's different from what was on the page in the scripts, which we, of course, we read all the scripts. So that's really where it becomes critical that we communicate with other people just to understand how things are evolving while we're executing, while they're executing.
And what we need from their storytelling to help move us forward. Yeah. I think in particular on this one, that was Ryan.
Yeah.
Because he was shooting while we were shooting. And there was a lot of cross-collaboration there. And he's done an amazing job with the level of detail that he has brought to the Wakandan universe. And incredible. And we've seen the trailer, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And
James and Taika, because they were both sort of executing and finishing, you know, while we were developing, so.
And Peyton, who's about to get going. And
Peyton's ramping up, so yeah.
Their story elements shared, and it's part of the fun with us.
Have the directors of Captain Marvel come by?
No, they're not yet. Newer to the equation.
I'm sure they'll be by soon, but I think they're just getting their feet wet. They're figuring out their story that they want to tell. You know, that's where Marvel's incredibly respectful. Everybody gets to, you know,
have their space
to come up with their individual vision for what they want to do. And then there's a point where it makes sense for us to intersect with them and talk about the storytelling. Now, we'll, of course, I'm assuming be meeting with them in the next month or so.
I wanted to ask about Thanos, because we've only seen him a couple times. He's like sitting down talking to people, or he's putting on his glove, but you guys are really bringing him to the screen. He'll be like assumingly like doing things, so you can talk about the process of bringing that character to life and working with Josh.
I mean, Josh is an amazing actor, obviously. One of the things about Thanos that we're most excited about is, look, one of the great things about these movies, you know, visual effects technology, you know, is always evolving. And, you know, every couple of years you're able to make a leap forward in some respect. and sort of bring something to the screen at an execution level that you haven't quite seen before. That's what's so excited about it, whether it be like something like Skinny Steve or what, you know, whatever the case may be. Well, as that technology evolves, we are able to bring more and more of what Josh Brolin can do as a performer into the fabric and the texture of what Thanos is in a way that we are extremely excited about. And I know that he is, as an actor, our visual effects team is very excited about. So that's, I think, one thing. It's just figuring out how, you know, again, having such a cursory view of the character in the past, it's almost like now we get to do the flip side of that, where you're going to see the, you know, every little vein in his face and every little twitch that Josh does. And every, you know, it's a very, very intimate portrayal and performance.
How's it working with he's now prepping to shoot Deadpool 2. Are you finished with him, or is he coming back? Because how is that working?
And we're sharing a lot of actors with a lot of movies.
Because our production is so long, you know, and because we have so many characters, we don't need them all the time. You know what I mean?
If we locked everybody up for the time we were shooting, we would shut down Hollywood.
You're doing something that no one in the MCU has done before, and that's shooting two movies essentially at the same time.
Yeah.
But there's been a lot of miscommunication about how they interact. You know, first they were all in War 2, now they're completely different movies. Can you guys just talk about how you're approaching that now and why you're shooting them back to back? Is it just really for scheduling purposes?
Yeah. I mean, our approach has always been, it's sort of like we look at the process, and as do Marcus and McFeely, it's like it's simply the same thing in a way that the Winter Soldier relates to Civil War, and the way that Civil War relates to Infinity War, these two movies will also relate to, you know, there's a narrative thread that is connecting these films, but at the same time, there's sort of an independence in terms of what the experience is or where the story goes, you know, it's not, so it isn't a true two-parter. I think maybe the two-parter concept came back when Marvel decided they were going to culminate the MCU, it was going to be a two-movie deal. But as we sort of developed the movie in execution, you know, it ended up being just a sort of like more of a two singular expressions, you know. And I think that's just what happened there.
You were saying earlier that every character is someone's favorite character. Is there anyone in particular that you guys are excited for the audience to react to?
Yeah.
It's always tough because we're going to walk back on set. Yeah. Somebody's going to be really disappointed we didn't
Anthony
say
Mackie.
That.
Anthony
Mackie! No, but that's a specific arc of a specific character that you're like...
Or even a pairing.
I mean, I think between Ragnarok and this film, I think Thor has a really, really compelling arc. I think he's a pretty fascinating character, and I think he's going to jump to the forefront of people's minds as a pivotal Marvel character after Ragnarok. And this.
Well, we've heard for Ragnarok that like he gets to, the way that Take is doing it is that, you know, he gets to show up his sense of humor a lot more, which is obviously something that we're excited to see. But is that tone in for his character something that you're trying to incorporate here?
You know, we grew up executing projects that were in a similar vein as Taika's sensibility, Arrested Development, Community. So we jive very well with Taika and with the direction he's taking that character in. I think that, you know, we always want and desire as filmmakers pathos as well out of our characters, and we find that humor and pathos in combination create a more, you know, profound experience for you. And I think that Taika has done that very well in Ragnarok, and we now get to take Thor on a really compelling journey. So
you guys fought to make sure that Spider-Man was going to be in Civil War. Are there any characters that you guys had to really like? We want these guys.
Everybody, so fun. Yeah. Every character, yeah. Everybody. You know, all the deals are hard. Everybody's expensive. It's very complicated to put together a movie of this scale. Sometimes it's easier to say, maybe we should just not do it with these guys, you know.
I mean, they truly fun, are. These movies are a producing wonder. I mean, it's you know, there are very few producing entities and producers like Kevin Feige that can pull together something like this.
Kevin and Lou, they've outdone themselves on this one. The Jenga puzzle of actor schedules that we're juggling is staggering and daunting.
Has there ever been a conversation for Fantastic Four?
I'm sure, you know, I'm sure when we sat around at dinners after a few drinks, we've all laughed and said, hey, it'd be great to go after this person or that person. But, you know, we know the how the business is structured. And, you know, I'm sure Marvel would love to work with all those characters. Just, you know, it's whether who owns them would be willing.
Yeah. Speaking extensively about the idea of the different tones, these different stories and all these different genres, when you're talking to the screenwriters about the idea that the superhero genre is kind of traditionally shot up at the Academy,
sure.
But they were saying they believe there could be a tipping point where, like, with the end of Lord of the Rings, even though that wasn't, you know, like, that was finally the movie where they caught up and, like, okay, we're going to give fantasy its due.
Sure.
I'm curious what you guys' thoughts are on the Academy and their opinion of superheroes and when you think that tipping point for superhero movies might be.
I mean, here's the thing is it's a hard question because it's like we just, you know, we're filmmakers, you know, so all we do is we think these stories are very important. We love them. We find them as exciting and as complex and inspiring and heartbreaking. And we believe that there are real stakes in them, real emotional stakes. So it's like for us, you know, yeah, this is sort of like exactly the kind of movies we aspire to and exactly the kind of movies we look for as filmgoers in the movie theater. And I think that, you know, you find that in the vast majority of the audiences. You know, the Academy is, sometimes plays a role of sort of protecting films that need more support. You know, the Academy's been very effective in promoting movies and getting eyeballs on movies that don't necessarily get large audiences. And I think that's been one sort of mission of the Academy and one very effective mission that they play in terms of like pulling attention to movies that can use it, you know.
And stories that can use it.
Yeah, stories that can use it. So these movies are so highly visible, I think there's less of an
urgency.
Less of an inclination to say, hey, we need to like pay attention. Everybody's already paying attention, you know. So I don't know. It's an interesting question, but. From our point of view, it's, you know, we take this as seriously as we take anything.
Because Avengers 3 and 4 are now more separate entities, is there a shift in focus on who the main characters might be, or a shift in style even between the two?
We always try to make each film different so they don't get repetitive. I mean, this kind of serialized storytelling, again, outside of the Bond franchise or Harry Potter, which was a distinctive story that was told. Harry Potter was a distinctive story that was told over that set of movies. You have to keep evolving, and you have to keep evolving who's at the forefront and who you're laying the story on, because I think rigor mortis had set in very quickly, and so for us, we absolutely are very, very particular about who carried the ball in this movie and who will carry it in this film, because each character represents a different theme, each character has different wants. And that can shape and color and retone an entire film depending on who you're following, especially in stories this big.
I know there's a ton of comic books with Thanos and the Infinity Gems, but were there any particular ones that were influential to you guys when making them?
Certainly the Starling book was, you know, our jumping off point. It's a brilliant comic, and the ideas behind it are so large. It's what pushed us to, you know, go for the scale that we're going for in these movies. But we also draw from, Anthony and I love the postmodern comics, so we're also drawing from Infinity, newer stuff, and we're kind of combining it all into, again, what's our favorite stuff, and how do we see elements from each helping our story and the story that we want to tell.
You talked a little bit about timeline and how this film is kind of very based on what happened at the end of the Civil War. But this film takes place, by my count, like 5-6 years after Guardians 2, because Guardians 2 is set right after Guardians 1. So how have the Guardians changed when we come to them here? Because they've now been a team for a long time. Groot must be bigger, right?
They've got. I mean, there are some changes.
Groot has grown. Yeah.
But I think, you know, I think changes are about chemistry and about camaraderie and the fact that they're closer and they're tighter and, and they've been doing it for a while. So that's, if there's any change, it's in that, as they may or may not intersect with the Avengers in this movie, they have cemented their chemistry as a team.
Yeah, their relationships have deepened.
And and they would stand in contrast to the other teams potentially in the movie.
You mentioned that you read, or you guys were reading a bunch of the scripts for the other Marvel movies. Is there one before Infinity War that has the biggest lead in that we should be expecting?
They all lead in their own way, I think. You know, as far as plot elements that actually drive towards the story, again, I think Marvel does a great job of segmenting the movies so that you can have your own experience in each film. I think from a plot standpoint, if there's any corollary, Ant-Man 2 probably has some elements that stitch in.
But we can't talk about what.
Who would you say has the best costume in this movie?
Where's Pisani? Can't remember. Have we blown it on Captain Marvel? Is that official? If it's not, it is official now. I think Captain Marvel's got a great outfit.
She has a mailbox that we saw.
Yeah, we saw the concept art at Marvel Studios.
I mean, I don't need my phone blown up with 42 text messages.
You guys introduced Black Panther before his movie this time, Captain Marvel before her movie. Like, how do you guys, what is the different approach between those two characters? How do you guys go about that?
How we feel about those characters and what we want their expression to be. And then, then when the next writer, as I'm using this analogy between comic books / director, picks it up, they pick it up where they want to pick it up, and they take it where they want to go with it. And I think you've seen, and everybody's, I haven't seen a lot of blowback from the way that people retone. I think people get excited. I mean, look at the fucking views for the Ragnarok trailer. Taika's point of view is really clear in that movie. And people went crazy. And I don't think you're looking at it going, well, geez, that's not a handoff from the Dark World tone or from the first Thor tone. I think you're responding to the fact that it's a reinvention of.
Can you talk about the Infinity Stones? At one point were just like these objects passed from one person to another, but now they're very personal. There's one in Vision, there's one in Doctor Strange. Like, how is that going to come to play?
In a very complicated way. It's I think that traditionally in movies there's a MacGuffin. Sometimes MacGuffin is a person. Sometimes it's a thing. I tend to find that it's a much more emotional when a person is involved. So we have quite a few MacGuffins in this movie that have different relationships to different people. Doctor Strange is a bearer of an Infinity Stone. He has been charged with protecting that Infinity Stone. So there are a lot of characters that will come into direct conflict with Thanos.
How much would you say the stones serve the structure of this movie?
Stones serve the structure.
Thanos hitting all the stones. How much is that?
It's very important to the structure of the film.
Yeah, it's one of the sort of bedrock of the film.
It's a key driver.
We'll just
movie.
Do one more giant.
Sorry. One of the key criticisms of the MCU has been the fact that we love these characters, but they're becoming increasingly invincible. It's like nobody wants to be killing them off. Are any major characters going to die in this movie?
You asked for it. You asked for it.
John, I'm sorry, John.
You were saying? Yeah.
We'll say this. We like mature storytelling. We like dramatic storytelling. We like intense storytelling. I think we appreciate conflict and we appreciate stakes. And without stakes, there really isn't a lot of value to the story. And I think if you look at the Marvel Universe as a whole, as a story that's been told for 10 years, you can look at this as the climax, and the stakes will be higher in this movie than they've ever been, times 10.
What's the title of the fourth one?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
So there you have it, our interview with the Russo brothers from the set of Avengers Infinity War. I do want to mention that at one point, I think one of the Russo brothers says that Captain Marvel is in the movie. This was recorded a month before Comic-Con, where the brothers clarified that Captain Marvel does not appear in Infinity War. So I'm not sure, you know, what the truth is there. Disney saying, you know, the filmmaking process changes and evolves. So there is a chance that she was going to be in the movie. It does basically seem that she's going to be in Avengers 4. But I would not take the Russo brothers' comments in this interview as a confirmation that she's going to be in Infinity War, because we're being told by Disney that that is not the case. But yes, anyways, if you want to read this interview in text form, you can do so on slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, all the popular podcast apps. Please send us an email, peter@slashfilm.com, with your comments, concerns, feedback. You know, we appreciate all your emails. Please go rate and review us on iTunes. Say some good things, tell your friends, and we will see you tomorrow.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.